welcome back to Success Series with Marina Lai. Today's guest, Debbie Kirsch, is the founder of the clothing brand Devi that now has stores in Luxembourg and Amsterdam. You will recognize it right away from the colorful prints and beautiful fabrics from India. Listen to Debbie's story about how she saw an opportunity to enrich the lives of others whilst empowering them to make a living from it, and providing us here in Luxembourg with unique, one-of-a-kind pieces of clothing. Listen to this interview and you will truly understand why it matters where your clothes come from, but also who made them. Thank you so much for joining me today. I'm here with Debbie Kirsch, and she is the founder and owner of the clothing brand Devi. So today she will talk to us a bit about how the brand started, what it means to start a company like this, and also maybe inspire young people to start something of their own. So hi, Debbie. Thank you so much for joining me.
Hi, Marina. Thank you so much for having me.
I have to admit, I was a bit pressured getting ready this morning. I was like, what do I wear? And I don't normally put this much thought into what I wear to a podcast.
Beautiful.
Thank you. I felt so pressured. I was like, I can't just wear something normal. I was like, I need to wear something that I'd wear on the weekend. I'm like a bit embarrassed to bump into my colleagues because they'll definitely be like, why is she dressed like that today? But yes, you are looking very colourful, wearing something of your own.
Yes, always. Yes.
Tell us a bit about your clothing brand.
So Devi, I created it 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. It was actually a creation I did between my bachelor's and my master's. I did my bachelor's in biology and environmental sciences and my master's in sustainable business and innovation. So actually nothing to do with design or clothing. But in order to get into my master's, I needed to do a lot of internships. And so that's why I did a gap year between the two studies. And I did many studies as internships here in Luxembourg. And I wanted to do one in India. I don't know why, but India was always like calling me. I don't know why. I've never been there. None of my family or friends. And so I was looking up for an internship over there. And I found one in northern India, in Rajasthan, precisely in Jodhpur. Mm-hmm. And I went there actually for an organic cotton project. So it was, again, nothing to do with clothes. And I went there and I was supposed to stay there for 5 months working in this specific NGO for their cotton project with the local farmers. And I went there and after a few days, it was just clear that this project is not going to happen. Kind of our mentality here in the West is so much like, okay, we want this, we get it straight away, it's easy to make it, da da da. Mm-hmm. And also everything that has to do with like sustainability and organic, it's so much here in our agenda, it's really priority. But if you then go to countries that still have other problems, you see that it's a luxury problem actually to care about these kind of things. So the farmers were like, okay, if we switch to organic cotton, we will need the double of the water. It's not possible to do this for us. And so, yeah, the project literally fell into water. And I was like, okay, I have to still stay here for at least for a month. What am I going to do? Mm-hmm. And this NGO had already another project called the Saheli Women. And this project is led by an Indian lady, Madhuji. She also became like my Indian mama because I always stay with her and sleep in her house with her family. And what she did with this project is that she took in many women from a very small village in northern India, like a desert village, actually, who are either widows, got rejected by their community, from lower castes or no castes. Like in India, you have this caste system. And yeah, when I arrived, there was this little hut. There were 20 women at the time in there. And they found their passion again by creating clothes together. Mm-hmm. And I love clothes. Like there's nothing, I think you can see me, I love colors. Yes. And clothes.
Yes.
And when I arrived, the more and more I was in India, the more, and I was traveling around, the more I got introduced to the negative sides of the fashion industry. And I really saw how unsustainable it is. I started doing my research. Already in my studies linked to the environmental sciences, I learned about how bad the fashion industry is to ecosystems, destroying nature, rivers. And while I was there, the more and more I saw how bad it is for the environment. For example, if you have big cities like Jaipur, where many factories are, where garments are produced, you have rivers around there, like they're literally black, like you don't even see like no fish, nothing in it anymore. And it's all due to the dyes that are thrown in there. Or one really shocking experience that I had, sometimes people ask me, what was the motivation for you, having no background in fashion, to actually launch your own brand? And one day we were walking around in streets there. I was visiting around Jaipur, and I always tell this story, but it still always gets me. And we were walking around there, and suddenly it was very smelly. We were in a small alley, and it was full of diapers. And I was like, why are there diapers? Mm-hmm. What's happening here? And the people with whom I were, they were like, for them, it was normal. They're like, well, if you see this, you know that around like a few kilometers, there's a factory where they produce clothes for very cheap. They have to work up until 18 hours a day. They're not allowed to go to the toilet, and they get one diaper a day. And that shocked me so much. And they were shocked that I didn't know. And I was the first one in high school buying Zara, H&M, you name it, everything for like $10, $15. And I was like, okay, we're not the one like paying the price, but it's the people over there that we don't see. And sometimes they have to pay with their life. And that was really the moment where I was like, okay, I really don't want to be actively part of this, like the system, fashion system is so broken. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be part of it anymore. And after the trip, I went back again to the Swahili Women's Center. For the first weeks, I was just managing the center, helping them to come up with new ideas. Back at that time, they had already two brands they worked with, but it was more like luxury brands who did like small capsule collections with them. Mm-hmm. And so I went back to the ladies and I was like, okay, you know what? Let's start, like, just make a few pieces. I don't know. This shocked me so much. And so at least we make a few things that I can wear for myself so that I know, okay, at least I know how it's produced and where it's produced. And so I stayed there for a few more months, and it was so much fun because, so they're not professional tailors either. So nor me, neither me nor them have really a background in fashion. And we hired Master G, that's like a tailor who came to give us workshops, to show us how to do patterns, how to cut. And it just made so much fun living with these ladies in this little center, because it's also so nice that their children are there as well. Mm-hmm. So they see how their moms are working, that they have a voice, that they're getting back again into society, being financially independent. And so after 4 or 5 months, I came back with my first 20 pieces. It was like some kimonos, some dresses. And I came back here and I had a little pop-up store in town. And people loved it. They loved the idea because, first of all, so for me, it was very important that everything is upcycled. So we don't produce any new fabrics anymore after I saw all these rivers being half dead because of the dyes that have been thrown in it due to the production of new fabrics and dyeing. I was like, okay, we just upcycle. There are tons of fabrics lying around the whole world waiting to be upcycled, not being used. So mainly what we use is like either saris, it's like the traditional garment clothes from over there. They're perfect to upcycle actually because it's a big piece of fabric. Mm-hmm. Or what I did is I went to factories who produce fabrics and ask if they have, for example, leftovers they don't use anymore, or fabrics that are produced with a mistake in it so that they could not actually really sell it. So we only take these fabrics. And then from the social aspect, so all the ladies get a good salary, and then there are two more, actually they're getting between 10 and 15 times the minimum salary from India. Mm-hmm. And then there are two more projects that are financed. First of all, it's the education of all their kids. Until now, there are about 150 kids in school. And the second one is a healthcare project where twice a month a doctor and a gynecologist comes to the center to check on the ladies and their kids. Mm-hmm. I think if you give education and health to someone, that's how a community can blossom. And so, yeah, now 4 years later, it's not 20 ladies anymore, but 75 ladies who are in the center. And we're still their main producers. And everything we do is quite simple. Like also what you see, what I wear, like all our cuts are simple because the fabrics are already like so colorful. Mm-hmm. And like this, it's also easy for all the ladies to learn the cuts. So I don't want to have any super extravagant, difficult designs, because if not, the ladies could not do it. And what I personally like the most about the brand is that, first of all, it's all a collaboration. It's not that I'm the one saying, okay, you have to do this and this in that way. Mm-hmm. So I still get, until now, all the fabrics by myself. I go there once a year for a month to really pick every single fabric that I can find, to check it, to touch it, and then bring it to the center. But it's super important for me that it's up to them which fabric they use for which design. Mm-hmm. So even for me, it's always like a big surprise when the items arrive, because I don't know where they put which like pattern or how they work with the different items. And also the designs, it's very important for me that they're not just their producers, but active, creative creators with me. And the second thing that I personally really like is that with each item, you always get the picture and the story of the specific person who produced the item. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something I see also when people enter the store. They're like, ah, okay, it's nice. And then they look at the tag and they see the picture and the story. And then they're like, wow, it seems like they really have a connection with the piece. Because I feel that that's today what's missing. Like, we buy so much, if it's food, if it's clothes, and nothing really has a meaning anymore. You get everything fast, cheap, you can throw it away, no problem, because mm-hmm. you had no connection with it. And that's really my goal, what I try to do with Devi, is to create, I always say, like, it's upcycled clothes with a story. And I want you to cherish and really, like, wear this item for your whole life. And I always say, even though, for example, if there's a mistake in it or if it breaks or I don't know what will happen over time, you can always bring it back to us. We will fix it for you, because we really want to, yeah, really make the life of this garment as long as possible and to really have a connection with it. So when you wear it, you maybe think about Gita Ji or Nitu or whoever, like, of the people who made it. And then, yeah, just wear it with proud and have a connection to it. I mean, now I'm doing it for 4 years, and we have our store in Luxembourg City Center. We opened a store 2 months ago in Amsterdam.
I saw that. That's so cool.
And that was so dear to me, because my master's, I did it in the Netherlands. And I mean, there the demand for more sustainable or special pieces is quite high. So I was like, okay, let's try to go over there. Mm-hmm. But of course, there the concurrent, like, the competition is much bigger than here in Luxembourg. So some people were like, oh, are you sure you want to try it? And the thing is, with COVID, actually what happened is, in so many big cities, so much had to shut down, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. But it's also an opportunity then for younger, newer brands, because normally if you would go somewhere, well, it would be very difficult to find a store in a good location. And normally they would only take you on a contract for a year or 3 years. But now, because so much was free, they were like, okay, you know what? You can have it for 2 months, because then it's not as much of a financial risk. Like, I could never take something without knowing the market for a year or 3 years. So that's what we did now. We had it for 2 months and it went quite well. So we take it longer now for 6 months. So we're going to be there for Christmas, where I'm super, super happy about. It's my favorite city. And so I'm always between Luxembourg and Amsterdam. And we also start producing now with new suppliers. So normally the families from whom we only got our fabrics mm-hmm. and our sari suppliers, it's Vimla, Kamla and Babu. Also during the pandemic, they started to work with us, because they were doing this only on the side and they had another job working in a shop, a little shop they had in India, and all of this had to close down. So they were like, okay, can we maybe not just be not only your suppliers, but only actively produce for Devi? And the thing is, because we were growing quite a lot at some point, especially last summer, and the ladies, I always think it should be like, you should grow slowly and sustainably. Like most of the ladies, when they have their kids, they only work like 2 or 3 hours a day. Like, they have flexible working hours, just how they want. So we were like, okay, we like, the demand is higher than the production we can take. So why not including also other people in our production chain? Mm-hmm. And there as well, we always have these two factors that we cover: their healthcare and the education of their kids. So that's something that's very important to me, even though, if we're going to grow, my dream is to go also maybe to other countries, work with other communities, with upcycling projects. Their education and health, it's always two aspects that I want to include in the clothing production.
That was amazing. God, the scale of what you're doing, though, you know, it's like, I mean, it's not just a store. It's a whole movement, you know, what you're doing. And you're changing the lives of these women that would not otherwise be able to get out of their situations. You know, I'm still stuck on your story about the nappies. Like that has not left the front of my mind. Like the imagery of that, I can't forget that. How do you manage the situation or the benefits that they have and taking on new people and making sure that the existing people are comfortable? How do you manage that whilst you are here and in Amsterdam?
So that's all managed by, again, by Madhu G, the lady I mentioned in the beginning, because she's the founder of the NGO. And that's always the thing. I'm like, okay, most of the things we always discuss together, and I go there at least always like 1 month a year. But for me, it's very important. Like, she's there because she's managing the daily like struggles she has over there. So if I place an order, she's like, okay, so we try to make it in this and this time. But then it's a birthday or it's a holiday and we're like, okay, maybe let's add one more month to be realistic. And she speaks English very well, Madhu G. The ladies work in the center, not so. Mm-hmm. Most of them not. Their kids can though. So that's nice when I see them growing up now that they speak English. And it was so cute. Last October I was there. So I arrived, and then normally we always have a meeting. I always tell more about the selling side to make them understand, okay, what goes best, in which way, what should we do? Now it's winter. Also the seasons, because they don't have our seasons.
True. You've got to explain the seasons.
Exactly. Yeah. So they're like, okay, let's make this crop tops. And I'm like, but it's November. I don't think someone will wear in our crop top, but maybe let's do a coat. So these kind of things we always discuss in the beginning. And then Madhu, of course, shares everything. Like, okay, we had this struggle. Electricity was not going. Or this happens, these are the plans, or we have these and these more women. And then I get to know the other women because, yeah, when I go there once a year, often many women start in the center during that year, which I've never, who I never met. So she's really more on the part. And for me, it's always very important also to know your role in this whole supply chain organization, because I love selling. I love to be with the clients. I love to sell the story and to tell the story. And but I always say when people are like, oh, it's so amazing what you do for this women. I'm like, it's not me. Like, I'm part of the chain, of course, because I sell the items. I created the brand with them. But never forget about Madhu G. Madhu G is really the one. She established this NGO on a daily basis. She's with these women. She's really the one because she is from there. She knows their needs. She knows their culture.
She's the bridge between you and them,
exactly.
Really.
She's the bridge. And without her, it wouldn't work. Without me, maybe it wouldn't work. But that's why, like, because often here, I think always when you work with NGOs or with projects in the global south, it's a very delicate topic because you have a lot of white saviorism or cultural appropriation. Or that's why I always say, okay, I know my role, creating, branding, DV, coming up with the designs, selling. And I mean, I do it with all my heart. But hey, the women empowering aspect or really being over there on a daily basis, that's Madhu G, because there are still so many struggles. Like, you have to imagine it's in this small little rural village, and having women there from different castes, different cultural, like different backgrounds, it's really not easy. And a lot of people criticized her a lot, especially men, for what they do.
Okay.
They're like, how can you do this? This is not how... You know, I mean, first of all, of course, the image of women over there is still very different, especially in rural areas. And then normally you don't have that Hindu or Buddhism people or people who practice Islam, that they work together, or people from different castes. That's normally not the case. So she's really breaking cultural norms over there, which, of course, takes time that other people around it accept it. So the first years was very, very hard for her. People sometimes threw stones at them, or even until now, if she goes sometimes to the post office and they see it's a woman and she's sending this cloth empowering these women, no, we're not going to send it. You know, like all these little daily struggles, that's really her who's managing them and dealing with them. So I always say it's like this big supply chain of all these women who have the same dream, who work together on it. I'm here on more the end part of the supply chain, selling and branding Davy and the items. But it's very important for me. I sit here and I can talk, but it's always very important to me to also give the voice to the women behind me who are maybe not having the chance to sit here and talk to you, for example, in an interview. So, yeah.
I love your awareness of that. There, like you say, there are so many people who are doing great, amazing things, but they want so much of the credit and they want so much of the spotlight on them. So thank you for being someone that has that awareness. It's really humbling. What do you think is the reason why you were the one that would go there? Because a lot of people travel to India, a lot of people travel all over the world and they see all these things and then they treat it like an experience and a holiday and they come back and they've written postcards, they tell stories of what they've seen, but they don't do anything about it. What is it that moved you and thought, I can actually be a role in this change?
I've always...
And not just an onlooker, I mean, mm-hmm. you know.
No, I think I was always a person of action. I love to do things. I need to do things. If not, I get very frustrated. Like since I was a small child, I was always like either painting or doing jewelry or even the first holidays I always went to. And for example, I remember the first time I went to Thailand. I was 19 years old with two of my best friends. We went there and I met all these small artisans, which is something we don't have here in Luxembourg. We have mm-hmm. these big brands, but you don't have someone who's sitting in the corner, like creating with their hands something. And I was so fascinated about it. And I remember always when I went on holidays, like there in Thailand, I always bought, when I liked something from an artisan, I always bought a lot in order to bring it to here and to tell their story and sell the items again here. So I think it's just something that I always had already in me. Mm-hmm. But also again with the brands, I always say to people, it was not planned. So I considered it always as a hobby. When I came back from India with the first pieces, I just sold them on the sides. And then I had still my 2 years masters that I was doing. And during that time, I think that's why I was not afraid to really launch me in it, because I was not aware of what it would be one day, that it would be a proper brand, that I would have two stores, employees. So I think I just saw it as a hobby, like nothing to lose, everything to win, full on in. And I loved doing it. And then it really organically and slowly grew step by step. So I think it was not like one specific moment where I was like, now I'm going to create this brand and I hope it's going to be like this or that. People always ask me, what was your business plan or what was your financial plan? And I'm always like, I only did now like a proper business plan. So yeah, it was nothing really, really planned. I think it was just something that I always had in me to do things. Like, I always loved stories, and I got this from my grandma. My grandma traveled the whole world, and whenever she came back from traveling, she always had, like, something really cute or special, like, from an artisan, and then she was talking for, like, an hour about this piece and the person who she bought it from, and I loved always these stories, because I felt like here, the items you buy, often they don't really have a story. Mm-hmm. So I think that's really what inspired me always to, yeah, whatever I have or do or wear, I always wanted to, you know, to know where it comes from, who produced it and in which way. Yeah, I think it was just something that, I got from maybe my grandma when I was young.
How important was it for you to have a physical store and not just sell online like a lot of brands do these days?
Super important, because I think it's such a difference if you're online. I mean, it's very hard to, even for us, to really tell the story and give you like a certain feeling through a website. Mm-hmm. Also because, of course, like I do it, or I have like one of the girls who helped me, we do the website ourselves. It's not professional. We don't have a lot of budget to have like this crazy experience, websites that someone programmed. So for us in the beginning, it was of course only online and then these pop-up stores, but I just felt people were buying more when they came into the store. And also it's more important for me, first of all, to have this personal connection with our clients mm-hmm. and to be able to really help them to find something that fits them perfectly. Because everything is one of a kind piece. It's very colorful. And sometimes people, like, they think, oh, this looks nice on the website, on maybe the other model. But then when they get it, it's like, oh, it actually doesn't suit my skin type or my hair, or whatever. And then they will not wear it. And often people will not bring it back to the store, maybe because they don't have time or they're lazy. We all know that feeling that we have something at home and we're like, actually, I should return it. So it's very important for me to have the clients with me in the store and to really consult them as much as possible. So many people know when they come to our store and they look for something, take at least an hour. Because first of all, we're going to look what design suits you best, what color suits you best. And I always say, like, my goal is that if you go out, that if you buy something, that it's really something you will wear 100%. And really, I always say it should be like a coup de foudre, like love at first sight. And if not, please don't buy it. Like, we had people in our store for hours and then they felt a bit ashamed in the end. They're like, yeah, I don't know. I'm like, no, don't feel ashamed. Like, it would be the worst for me would be that you would buy something now and it would just lay in your closet. Mm-hmm. We have so much stuff lying in our closet that we don't use. That's the opposite of what I would try to do with the brand. So yeah, this personal connection, really going the extra mile for each client to find, yeah, a meaningful piece that they will love and cherish. It's for me like the A and O, and it's very difficult to provide this service through a website.
What's been the most difficult thing about this process for you?
It takes a lot of your own energy. I learned to have this life work balance. But the last year, I think it was very difficult because I could never stop. So even in the evening at 11, someone is writing me on Instagram, hey, I'm looking for this or that, or could you send me some pictures? I cannot come to your store. And I would always do it. So I could never stop. Mm-hmm. But I think that's also something where people should be aware of, that if you love something, it's great to have a job that you love so much and you do it with so much passion, but don't forget about yourself. Because at some point you're just so trapped in it and you have no, or you simply don't take time for yourself, for your friends, maybe for your family, because you're like, oh, but this is the most important thing. Mm-hmm. And at some point you can become a bit sick. Like, I had a lot of problems with bladder infections. Constantly, I was a bit sick. I didn't sleep enough. I had no weekends. So I think to find this balance between, okay, now, phone, computer, store shut, put everything away. Now it's your time or time with your family, friends. It's very important to find this, and very difficult to find this balance. So that was for me personally the most difficult thing to let go. I mean, it's beautiful, like I said, to have something that you have, like, you're so passionate about, but it's so important to know the boundaries and to be like, okay, in the end, this is still just a job. And it should not be your whole life. So to have a balance between your private life and working life.
I think it's because we hear of these success stories, you know, of entrepreneurs doing very well and they've treated their business like a baby.
Yes.
And they, you know, they tell these stories of, you know, not sleeping, not going out, not seeing friends, not relaxing, not doing anything for themselves. So I think we have the image that that is what living a successful life looks like, but there's many ways that you can be doing this, many more sustainable ways, right?
Yeah.
If you weren't doing this, what do you think you'd be doing?
I think I would be a teacher, because also what I do now with Devi, almost every 2 or 3 weeks I go to schools, mostly high schools, to give lessons about upcycling, why that is important, or I give entrepreneurial courses. And I don't know, I think, yeah, it's the next generations of our country, and it's so dear to me that, like, we talked in the beginning a bit about it before we started here, like this culture of an entrepreneurial mindset and to dare to do something. I think, yeah, it's so important to teach this already to kids in an earlier stage, and that it's fine also to be lost sometimes and not to know what to do, and that there's more outside of Luxembourg, and that they should take gap years or travel or whatsoever. So I love being in contact with kids. So I think I would like to be a teacher.
Mm-hmm. If you think back to when you made the decision to start this, was there ever a part of you that felt the pressure of letting these women down, or letting, like, Madhuji down, because you would say, okay, well, I'm going to try this and it may or may not work? Did you feel that?
No, it's actually a good question.
Okay, no, that's great. I mean, that because maybe being the mind that I am, I'm like, oh my God, all these people I might let down, you know. But maybe that's not the way to think about it, obviously.
No, I think because when I arrived, so the ladies who were there already, they had already the two other brands they worked with. So I knew they are okay. And we, like I said, we grew very slowly and organically. Like Madhuji would never say now, okay, tomorrow let's have 70 more ladies in the center without knowing that there is enough production going mm-hmm. on. Actually, I think she mainly did this now since we have a fixed store. So we know, okay, there's like we provide them every month with work. But no, I think at that time also, I mean, the organization was also quite smaller, and even if the ladies only had a few items to do per day, they were already happy.
It was a bonus, wasn't
it? Yeah, everything. So, I mean, also, I think they never expected that their organization would grow that much. Some of the ladies, one, Gita Ji, she's the quality control manager, and when she arrived in the center 4 years ago, she was very shy. She always had her veil like over her head, looking down. She had two beautiful little boys. And when you see her now, like she is like so powerful and so proud. It's almost intimidating when she comes into the room. Like wow. We don't speak the same language, but when she comes in the room, she fills the room with her energy, and like she's managing the quality. So before anything is getting shipped to us, she's like checking if it's fine, if the quality is good. And if something is not good, Gita G is getting fiercey. She's getting angry. And it's so amazing to see this. But I think also this woman never thought, I think 4 or 5 years ago, that one day she would evolve into that woman.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so cute because so last October when I went back, her kids at that time when I arrived, they were like 2 or 3, so still very young. Now they're around 6, 7. And they speak a bit of English, and I arrived in the center and Gita Ji was doing her thing, a bit like being fiercey and being like, okay, this was not okay. We want to grow together. We have to make this quality better. Nah, nah, nah. And then the boys, they looked at me and they're like, my mommy is such a boss. Oh. And I was like, yes. And that's exactly why this project is here. You know, your mommy is a boss, and it's nice that you see this and yes. consider this, and that she feels also in that way. So yeah, I don't think that 4 years ago anyone thought that we didn't know where we would go. And I think it's also because we were not scared and having this fears of like, ooh, like, can we do this, or we have pressure. I think no one had this feeling, and that's why we could just all evolve. So in such a pure and maybe I would say sometimes naive, I would consider mm-hmm. myself as crazy optimist and naive, but I think that's sometimes good to be. Fear of failure and pressure, what will people think, whatever, that's sometimes what really hinders you of doing things. So I don't think that any of the women, nor Madhuji or I, have had this, luckily. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, of course, but mainly, like, most of the time you're very optimistic. And I was like, okay, next up we do this, and then we're going to grow, and 2 years we're going to have 150 ladies in the centers, and how are we going to do this? So yeah, I think we all, like, we still have this little girl with big dreams all in us, which I think I personally really, really like.
I can see that and I love it. This is going to be a big question for you. I feel like there could be many ways that you would answer this. What are the lessons that we in the West could be learning from Indian culture that you've seen?
I love that you asked this question mm-hmm. because mostly people are always like, our people in the global South, they should acquire and look at what we do here in the
Mm-mm,
West.
No.
They're like,
oh, no, no, no. no.
We learn so much from them. And one sentence I love, when I was traveling to Jaipur, I was taking a train in India. And it should leave, I think it was like around 11. And I was there 5 minutes before 11, like we do it here, right? And then it's 11, 5 past 11, I start getting nervous. I'm like, what's happening? Why is the train not here? Everyone around me is so relaxed on the railway. I was like, okay, where's the train? 20 minutes past, 50 minutes past. I was like, what's happening? Why? Where is this train? And people were like, relax, it's coming. It's maybe an hour or two late. And I was like, what? How can this be? You know, it's like everything, like we're used here to have everything in our schedule. Like when I look at my calendar as well, I'm like, oh, it's so annoying. Like, why do we have to structure? Like, I get it. I understand. But sometimes I think because everything is so structured and scheduled, we really miss living in the moment. And that's something that I really learned in India. Just sometimes relax. Like, let's just wait now for the train. And so often I came into a position in India where I was like, okay, for the next 2 hours, I'm just going to sit here. I have no internet, no Wi-Fi, and I have to wait for train. In my mind, I was like, worst situation ever, because I'm very active and I always want to use my time well. And I always think that using my time well is doing things all the time. But no, there I really learned that sometimes not doing anything is the best you can do. And so I was just sitting there, looking at the birds, observing people going by, and I was really in the moment. And that's something that I really learned in India. And it's funny because the man I was talking to all the time, like, where's the train? Da, da, da. He's like, you know what? You guys have the watches in the West, but we have the time. And I will never forget this sentence. And I was like, that's beautiful, because it's so true. How often are we like, everyone is stressed, in a rush. I have no time for this, no time for that. Even me saying before that I have no time for myself sometimes. I'm like, no, like, I'm managing my time then in a wrong way.
Mm-hmm.
And just, yeah, to relax, to just be in the moment. That's really something that I learned from the Indian culture and family. Mm-hmm. For them, family is everything. Like, they live all together with their grandpas, grandma, uncles, everyone. Like, family comes always first. And I think that's so beautiful, because here, like, I have a very good relationship with my grandparents, but so many people I know maybe call them, like, for the birthday and Christmas, and that's it. So mm-hmm. I think this family and time is like, yeah, two aspects that I really love about the Indian culture, and is definitely something we can all here learn from.
Tell me what you would tell your 18-year-old self.
Not to be stressed, and not to think that at every moment in time you need exactly to know who you are and what you want to be. I was always a very structured person, and I always wanted to, yeah, really know already. Like, with 18, I was like, okay, I want to do this and that, and I hope that by the time of 25, I do this and that. And that's just not how life normally goes. And I, yeah, over the last 10 years, because I'm 28 now, so it's exactly 10 years ago when you ask, like, your 18-year-old self, I think I really, yeah, I would take myself and hug me and just be like, okay, little girl, it's all going to be fine. Don't stress yourself, and it's okay not to be okay sometimes, and just follow your dreams. I know it sounds very cheesy, but I think sometimes that's still like the best advice you can give someone. And yeah, just not to be stressed, and yeah, follow your heart and your dreams.
Thank you. Last question. How has your brand and building this brand enriched your life personally?
Oh, that's a very good question. I think, like, what the brand gives me is, like, I honestly am so happy with my life. And even now, it's weird because I felt ashamed now saying this, because most of people are always like, oh, my life is hard, or I'm not happy, But I honestly, I just love waking up every morning and doing what I love and being creative. And for example, yesterday I found an amazing photographer in Paris. And I was like, okay, I'm going to write this photographer and ask if we could do a collaboration together. And these kind of things is what I really love, because in the morning I wake up and I don't know how my day will end. And I love also the fact that I can meet so many people through my brand from all kind of sectors. Like, I meet an amazing photographer, or this super cute grandma. We have like one client, she's from the Pescator in the elderly home, and she's 92, and almost every Saturday she comes by in our store, and she just loves colors. You know, it's like this panoply of different people and experiences that I get to live through this brand is what I'm the most, really most grateful for.
Thank you. That was an amazing interview. I loved all your answers, like everything. Just very colourful person, you know, you've lived a colourful life and colourful person, and it reflects in your brand and what you say. So thank you so much for sharing with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Please share your address for the store.
It's 7 Rue Aldringen. It's when you get out, like when you have the Galerie Lafayette in front of you, there's like a little street going up again to the Rue des Bains. It's a bit hidden, but yeah, it's 7 Rue Aldringen.
And your Amsterdam
flowers in front of the door.
Okay, so look out for the flowers. An Amsterdam address?
That's 10 Oude Spiegelstraat. The Dutch people would probably kill me now by pronouncing it like this. Yeah, 10 Oude Spiegelstraat in the 9 streets.
Okay, and if all else fails, we'll go on the website, which is?
It's dv/clothing.com or on our Instagram, dv.clothes.
Okay, thank you so much and best of luck with your brand. Thank you
so much for having me.